presents I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games. At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is Humphrey Littleton.
Welcome to a seasonal edition of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the programme that does for Christmas what a large dollop of sage and onion mixture does to a turkey. And as you'd expect for this extra special Yuletide programme, our teams are comprised of the foremost available comic talents in the country. I'm sorry, that should of course read the four most available comic talents. And they are, on my right, Willie Rushton and Tim Brooke-Taylor. And on my left, Graham Garden and Barry Cryer. And to score for us today, taking a night off from her successful run in pantomime, which she's done wonders with the important part of the principal boy. A warm hand, please, for the delightful Samantha. Incidentally, Samantha was telling me she went vegetarian this year. But she says she has had some pheasant and a bit of partridge this Yuletide. Perhaps she'll even enjoy a little goose. Either way, it's nice to see her back on the game. Before we do round one, teams, you'll see that in front of you you have a Christmas cracker. What I'd like you to do is to pull the crackers now, and then I'm going to ask you to tell us what you have in them in the way of a gift, and also to sing the motto that you find inside.
Pull the cracker. I've got a
bird. Those of you listening at home, I'd like to put your fingers in.
I've got a dead bird in mine.
Mine says keep
away
from children.
Okay, Willie, start then. A dead bird and your motto, yes. Will you please sing? Colin, give them an intro.
It's more of a riddle. What is the difference between photography and influenza? Answer. One makes facsimiles, the other sick families. And now for the hard of hearing.
Yes, you can have a mark for that, Willie. We'll go over now to Graham.
Why is a pig's tail like a carving knife?
I don't know. Why is a pig's tail like a carving knife?
Because it's waved over ham. Victorian conundrum.
Graham, we never heard what gift you've got in yours.
I got a pirate's eye patch. I was hoping for a parrot.
Oh, never mind. Too bad. Tim Brooke-Taylor.
I seem to have a bracelet made of Esther Ranson's teeth.
Cupid's arrows strike the dart deeply through my faithful heart. Evermore, my love, thou art.
What a boring cracker this one was.
Tim is now showing it to the audience.
That's certainly the best motto so far. Now, Barry.
It's a small plastic urn. It's like something for providing specimens from midgets. I don't know what. I tried to blow it, Humph, but there we are.
Why do old maids wear muffs? Why do old maids wear muffs? What a good question you're asking me. Why do old maids wear muffs? To which I reply, to keep off the chaps.
Our first round is entitled Historical Headlines. It may be of interest to some listeners to know that there were, in fact, several newspapers in existence at the time of that first Christmas 2,000 years ago. In comparison with today's newspapers, these were primitive, ill-written documents. So, pretty much the same, really. Teams, I'd like you to suggest how our papers might have covered the nativity. And Barry, I'm going to ask you to start, please.
Headline in the Daily Mail, Branson sponsors virgin birth.
Willie?
I got one from the Independent, which is sparse queues for Herod's Christmas sale.
Graham?
The one from Exchange and Mart, unwanted frankincense and myrrh will swap for Nintendo.
And Tim?
I've got one, The Guardian. It says, in our earlier edition, Son of Dog should have read... should have read Accrington Stanley.
But open season now. Anybody got any more?
Sunday Sport, Elvis spotted in Bethlehem.
Farmers Weekly... Cow says, I was there, exclusive.
The Daily Express, we'll call him David, say Mr. and Mrs. Ike.
Times, we were following yonder star, unlikely claimed by three wise men held at customs.
Sun with their usual snappy headline. Jezza of Nazza, born in Beza, Gazza in Gaza.
OK.
Knitting and Knitters, special swaddling supplement.
OK, shall we go on to the next one?
Why not?
Yes, let's. The next round is called Sound Charades. This is adapted from an ancient Chinese game called Miming, where the object was to describe a favourite 14th century porcelain vase. Our version of this highly amusing, highly entertaining and highly witty game differs only in a few areas. The one's just after highly. And of course in this game the teams are permitted the use of their mouths. So teams, I'd like you please to enact the titles of various entertainments from stage, screen or wireless, likely to be seen or heard over the Christmas period. Tim and Willie, you're going to start, and your title will shortly be broadcast to our studio audience via the luminescent magic of the laser-projected, computer-controlled hologram imager screen. While listeners at home will hear the mystery voice.
Mother Goose. Mother Goose.
Right, Barry and Graham, you'll have to try and guess what this is. Tim and Willie, is it a film, TV programme or what?
Two words, theatre.
Christmas show. We'll start now. Ready?
Yes.
Oedipus?
Yes, Mum?
Don't do that.
There's a family connection here. What? Mum, as in mother.
Yes.
Oedipus is mother. Oedipus indulging in a ploy that his mother didn't like.
I think it's Mother Goose.
I would have concurred.
It's your turn now, Barry and Graham, and your title is now going up on the hologram image screen. And here's the mystery voice for listeners at home.
The Queen's Speech. The Queen's Speech.
Right, what is it, Barry and Graham?
It's a TV program.
It's three words.
Begin.
Hamish, nice to have you here for Christmas. You'll have had your dinner.
No, Edward.
Would you like to see my hives?
Oh, how very unpleasant.
No. No.
Good bees.
No. You misconstrue. Come down the bottom of the garden here and see my jolly swarm.
Oh, the bees, the wee
yes,
bees.
Yes, they've settled.
Aye.
They've settled now, bless them. And they're feeding on the honey as usual, but... look at her.
She's a big one, isn't she?
She's over there.
Aye.
She's got her own wee meal there.
What's that she's eating?
What? She's eating?
Aye.
That succulent fruit?
That's a very succulent-looking fruit.
Oh. Anybody comes near that, it's the fear of death in them.
That's her own fruit, then.
It's
the succulent fruit, is it?
You're very observant.
And you put it in yourself every day.
Anyway, come in the gazebo. I've something to show you.
Oh, well.
Yeah, this succulent fruit, what do you call it?
I would have thought it was obvious, Hamish.
Tim and Willie, can I just tell you something? They always tell you on these radio shows that even if you know the answer, to sort of hedge round it a little bit, you know, to kind of entertain the audience. Well, forget it.
Queen and Fruit.
Queen and Fruit. Well, there's a few of them around the building, I believe.
Pomegranate.
They call her Queenie.
We don't know it. Well, I don't know it. Bees?
What? Bees?
Is there a fruit? Is fruit relevant?
The
fruit.
Very much.
Terribly,
so,
terribly relevant.
Oh, it's three words.
The Queen's melons. There must be a problem.
Close.
Pursue that route.
The Queen's pear.
Pear of Queen.
Don't forget you've only got 30 seconds.
The Queen's... what have we...
I can't believe this is happening.
Mother Gooseberry.
We give up.
Oh. Give them a clue.
What? Peach.
Oh, it's the Queen's peach.
I've always thought it was the Queen's peach. I always thought it was a Christmas message. It's not called a Queen's speech at all.
No, it is called the Christmas message. That's why we didn't get it.
Bad losers.
It's now time to play a special Christmas version of the popular round Good News, Bad News. It's called Good Tidings, Bad Tidings. In this round, teams, I'd like you please to take it in turns to continuously alternate good tidings with the corresponding bad tidings. When I've had enough, I shall give a signal for you to stop. Now, I don't have the horn this Christmas like I usually do. So, instead, teams, your signal to stop will be the charming and evocative sound of Santa's sleigh bells. Okay, who's going to start now?
Make Samantha do that again.
Graham, will you start, please?
Good tidings. The royal family are spending Christmas at Balmoral.
Bad tidings. And Highgrove, Windsor, Kensington.
Good tidings. Prince Charles has been seen under the mistletoe.
Bad tidings. With a Christmas tree. And how long have you been a Christmas tree? Fascinating conversationalist you are. Interesting work it must be.
Good tidings, Princess Anne's dancing cheek to cheek with Tim.
Bad tidings, Tim. Here comes Commander Lawrence.
Good tidings. Prince Philip has gone out to shoot turkey.
Bad tidings. He missed and hit Greece. Shot himself in the foot.
Good tidings. The Queen's Christmas message was shorter this year.
Bad tidings, just the one finger.
Oh, couldn't find the bell.
Oh, let's be free again.
Okay, Tim, you're going to start with some good news. Go ahead.
Good news, will please you, Humph. We're all getting a Christmas bonus.
Bad news, so are all the other pensioners.
The further good news, we're all getting a little something extra in our stockings.
Bad news, varicose veins.
Yes, well done, Graham.
Several years' medical training went into
that. Oh, yes.
Willie Rushton, do you want to start with some good news?
Good news. Prince Charles is engaged.
Bad news is the train is still standing in the station.
Good news is that's what I call a royal flush.
Bad news is I haven't got a funny line.
The good news is British Rail have got hundreds of them.
We've got time for another round of that, so we'll start with you, Graham. Give us some good news.
Yeah, good news. I've just finished stuffing the turkey.
Bad news. It didn't respect me afterwards.
Good news, I've just pulled a cracker.
Bad news, he didn't respect me afterwards either.
Good news, I'm looking forward to seeing Bonnie Langford in Cinders.
Bad news, I've run out of matches.
Good news, I'm looking forward to seeing Tommy Steele's Buttons opening next week.
Bad news, you're on your own.
Okay. Right, we're going to have some festive limericks now.
Oh, right.
During the last few weeks, we've been inundated with a letter from our regular correspondent, Mrs. Trellis of North Wales, who writes, "Dear Mr. Littleton, why, oh, why, oh, why?" Very nearly spells yo-yo. So, thanks there to Mrs. Trellis, and keep writing. In this round, teams, I shall provide each of you with the promising first line of a limerick, which I'd like you to complete, taking one line each. We're going to start with you, Graham. When out in the woods after holly...
I heard someone sing, "Hello, Dolly."
It was Danny LaRue.
Who said, "How do you do?"
So I showed him with the use of my brolly.
Okay, Tim, your turn. When Santa was out in his sleigh...
He said, "Oh, how I love Christmas Day."
All over the earth...
we rejoice in his birth.
And the reindeer all shouted, "Oy vey!"
Barry, first line for you coming up. While hanging some balls on my tree...
While hanging some balls on my tree, I suddenly saw I had three.
I had some fruit cup.
And two then lit up.
And the third one said, "What about me?"
Finally, one for you, Willie. There was an old skinflint called Scrooge.
There was an old skinflint called Scrooge who anointed his nipples with rouge.
Said, "I feel a right Charlie.
But you should see Marley."
He's chained to a sailor in Bruges.
Graham Garden. There's a fairy on top of our tree.
Who looks strangely familiar to me.
That isn't a fairy.
It's Julian Clary.
Well, I never. Good heavens, blow me.
Nice, nice one for you, Tim. In the night when you've hung out your stocking...
In the night when you've hung out your stocking, from the chimney you'll hear something shocking.
It might well be Santa.
He's been at the decanter.
And now, vintage port, back he's knocking.
First line for you, Barry. This Christmas we found a Yule log.
This Christmas we found a Yule log on which there was sitting a frog.
He turned into a prince.
We've not seen him since.
Mind you, we've not looked in the bog.
Right, Willie, last one for you. When Santa gets bored in his grotto...
When Santa gets bored in his grotto... he doesn't play bingo or lotto.
He sits on a shelf.
Toys with an elf.
Sod this for a lark is his motto.
Right. Our next round is a firm favourite called Swanee Kazoo, which delightfully matches the lilting ululation of the Swanee whistle with the rhythmic rasp of the kazoo. Teams, I'd like you each to provide us with versions of favourite Christmas carols on these two fine instruments. You'll be accompanied on the merry organ by Colin Sell. And since this is a season of goodwill, I must take this opportunity to repudiate some of the unfair criticism that some listeners appear to feel Colin receives on this programme. Who from? I don't know. There's many a pianist who'd give their right arm to play like Colin Sell. In fact, losing an arm would be a very good way to perfect the technique. Tim and Willie, you're to start, and your carol is Deck the Hall with Boughs of Holly, and it's to feature Willie Rushton on kazoo and Tim Brooke-Taylor on Swanee Whistle. Your turn, Barry and Graham, and I'd like you, please, to provide a rendition of The 12 Days of Christmas to feature Barry Cryer on kazoo and Graham Garden on Swanee Whistle.
Thank you.
For 23 years, our good listeners and I have had to put up with these paltry attempts at musical expression. Surely, on this of all days, they deserve something slightly better. And they shall have it. For unbeknownst to our studio audience, I've managed to smuggle in two genuine members of my band to provide some assistance. So will you please welcome Paul Bridge on bass, Adrian McIntosh on drums. Okay, let's try and do it properly this time and provide a rendition of the traditional Christmas ballad, Walking in a Winter Wonderland. Are you ready? One, two, three. Didn't know I had a trumpet secreted under the table, did you? And I'd like to thank Samantha for keeping it warm. Before we go, I'll just squeeze in a swift round of Santa's Film Club. Deemed, I'd like you please to suggest some suitably Christmassy film titles that you feel might usefully be shown over the festive period. And Tim, would you start, please?
I'll start with Three Wise Men and a Baby.
King Kong Merrily on High.
Dial M for Myrrh.
The Lone Reindeer.
Basic Incense.
Indigestion Jones. And the Last Lucasade.
Look back in manger.
Silence of the Turkeys.
Missile Total Recall.
Wenceslassie Come Home.
Gunfight at the OK Carol Service.
Separate stables.
The mince pie that came in from the cold.
When Harry met Santa.
Jagged sledge.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is where I have to...
Ho, ho, home alone, too.
The turning of the Scrooge.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as the twin buttocks of time struggle onto the photocopier of eternity, and the tipsy secretary of fate fends off the managing director of destiny, I notice that it's the end of the show. Join us again next year for more of the same. In the meantime, from the teams, Samantha and myself, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Goodbye. Thank you.
In the I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue Christmas special, Tim Brooke Taylor, Barry Cryer, Graham Garden and Willie Rushton were being given silly things to do by Humphrey Lyttelton, with Colin Sell setting some of them to music. The producer was John Naismith. A special festive edition of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games. At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is Humphrey Lyttelton.
Hello, and welcome to a special Christmas edition of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. Many of today's Christmas customs are based on earlier rituals. The traditional flaming Christmas pudding, for example, dates back to the 17th century, when a form of stiff porridge was made containing plums, preserved quinces, lemon peel, ox blood and grated pig livers, all bound together with goose fat. No wonder they say far to it. As it was prepared, children would be treated to a lick of the mixing bowl on what was known as stir-up Sunday, that being the day before throw-up Monday. We still also have the tradition of eating mince pies dating back to the last century, so be careful to check the sell-by dates. But of all traditions, no Christmas would be complete without a great big turkey that seems to last forever. OK, we might as well get on with it. Our first round is entitled Nativity Radio Times. Now, it isn't widely known that the original Listings magazine has been around since the 2nd century BC and was first published in Greece by the philosopher who lent his name for the title, Theradiotimis. Scholars of the history of 20th century broadcasting won't need me to tell them that it wasn't until the 20th century that Marconi devised wireless to promote his famous pasta dish. And Logie Baird constructed a television set with the help of his little friend, Boo Boo. Teams, now, I'd ask you please to suggest TV, radio and film titles likely to have been featured in a Christmas souvenir double issue of the Radio Times, dating back to the time of the Nativity. Graham, would you like to start, please?
Christ Watch UK.
The Carpenter's Christmas Special.
Opportunity Ox.
Some mothers do have them.
Mangerfield.
Wise men behaving gladly.
The Magi Roundabout.
Film Nothing.
That's it.
Okay. The teams are going to sing for us now in a festive edition of One Song to the Tune of Another. The accompaniment will be provided by Colin Sell, who I was interested to read has something of a reputation for his funk music arrangements. According to my copy of the Arts Guardian, if it's a good dance rhythm you want, you can always rely on Colin Sell to funk it up. And Colin will be accompanied by Mick Hutton on bass and Adrian McIntosh on drums. Yeah. Graham, will you start, please? I'd like you to sing the words of the Bee Gees' Surfing USA to the tune of While Shepherds Watch Their Flocks by Night.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody'd be surfing like California. You'd see them wearing their baggies, huarache sandals too, a bushy, bushy blonde hairdo, surfing USA.
Your turn, Barry. Barry, would you please sing the words of A Whiter Shade of Pale to the tune of The Holly and the Ivy.
We skip the light fandango, turn cartwheels across the floor. I was feeling kind of seasick, but the crowd called out for more. The room was humming harder as the ceiling flew away. And we called out for another drink. The waiter brought a tray. And so it was that later, as the miller told his tale, that her face at first just ghostly turned a whiter shade of pale.
Okay, it's you now, Jeremy. Would you please sing the words of When I'm Cleaning Windows to the tune of O Little Town of Bethlehem.
Now I go cleaning windows to earn an honest job for a nosy packer. It's an interesting job. Now it's a job that just suits me, a window cleaner you would be if you could see what I can see when I am cleaning windows.
Finally,
turned out nice again.
Tim, would you please sing the words of Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick to the tune of Ding Dong Merrily On High?
In the deserts of Sudan and the gardens of Japan, from Milan to Yucatan, every woman, every man, hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me, hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me slowly, hit me quick. Hit me. In the walls of Borneo and the vineyards of Bordeaux, Eskimo.
Right, the teams are going to display their acting skills next in a seasonal version of Sound Charades. This is based on the old TV favourite Give Us a Clue, where contestants were given a limited time in which to describe a famous book, film or song title using only mime. The show was made all the better by its resident expert Lionel Blair, who was particularly good at the films of Richard Gere. Who can forget the gleam of satisfaction in his eye when he was given yanks by Michael Aspel for 2 minutes? original game was conducted in complete silence. So is this version, usually. OK, Barry and Graham, you can start. The title of your festive charade will shortly be relayed to our studio audience via the laser display board. While for our listeners at home... Oh, it says here, listener at home, that's better. Here's the mystery voice.
Changing rooms. Changing rooms.
And it is a...
A TV show. Two words.
Two words. Casper.
Oh, Melchior. He'll have had your mur.
Well, well, no, but Jings, where's Balthazar?
Oh, he's over there, man.
So he is. I didn't see him because he's not very big, is he? Barely 5 feet tall.
Oh, well, you're a fine one to talk at 4'3".
And what about you at 3'2"?
Fair enough.
Look here. What? Looky here. Have you arranged the accommodation at Bethlehem for us all?
Oh, what a palaver. My secretary faxed the hotel and they said they only had one room left, and that was sharing in a stable, if you please. Apparently the last room at the inn had been taken by a family of carpenters.
Never.
Yes. Oh, I had to point out that carpenters are not valued customers, whereas three wee kings of Orient are.
You little wordsmith. So, we get the room.
And the carpenters get the stables.
Well, we'd better mount these camels.
Oh, do we have time?
Oh, come on.
Is this specifically a Christmas show?
No.
No.
Is it changing rooms?
Yes.
Here's a further title going up for you, Tim and Jeremy. And here's the mystery voice for listeners at home.
Miracle on 34th Street. Miracle on 34th Street.
Wait, it's a film. Four words. I think it was... Yeah. Was there a book as well? Anyway, it's a film, definitely. Yeah. And it goes somewhere like this.
Where are we?
Oh, somewhere between 33rd and 35th Street.
Oh! Now, there's a pub along here. Fancy a drink, Barry? Cryer, that is.
No, not for me, thanks.
Relevant, the streets you mentioned.
The street?
Yeah.
Very specific.
34th Street. An amazing occurrence on 34th Street. Something you would hardly believe. I find this very offensive, incidentally.
Stick with the theme of impossibility.
A miracle.
Yeah.
The next game is the old favourite called Complete Crackers. In this game, the teams will attempt to provide punchlines to terrible jokes, just like they do in all the others. OK, teams, here are the beginnings of some well-known Christmas cracker jokes to which I'd like you to provide amusing punchlines. Graham, what do you get if you cross a cowboy with an octopus?
You get Butch Cuttlefish and the Sundown Squid.
Very nearly right. Billy the Squid is the answer. So Tim, close. Now, why do cows have bells?
Because if they had balls, they'd be bulls. Sorry, Mummy.
The answer is because their horns don't work. Jeremy, what has a bottom at the top?
Robin Cook.
The answer, of course, is a leg. Barry, what do you call a woman who balances... What do you call a woman who balances glasses of lager on her nose?
Darling.
The answer is Beatrix.
Oh, dear.
Don't blame me. Graham, why did the skeleton refuse to go to the disco?
Because he was dead.
Because he had no body to dance with. This is really depressing me, I tell you. When is it unlucky to see a black cat?
When it's driving a truck straight at you.
Or when you're a mouse.
That's true. That's true.
Jeremy, what do you get if you eat too many Christmas decorations?
Yule logs.
The answer is tinselitis. Barry, what's the difference between an elephant and a biscuit?
A biscuit always forgets.
My answer is you can't dunk an elephant in your tea. I don't know. Graham, what should you do if you find a rhino sleeping in your bed?
Brace yourself.
The answer is sleep somewhere else. See the point of that? And finally, Jeremy, what do you get if you put a sheep in the sauna?
A Welsh leisure centre.
The answer is a woolly sweater. Okay, well, moving on, it seems that TV general knowledge quizzes are all the rage these days. And we're going to have our own Christmas quiz now, with the winner carrying off the star prize. Today's prize is guaranteed to keep the keen cook amused in the run-up to Christmas. It's this lovely advent calendar. Stephen, why did the appearance of the first Christmas card invented by the leading Victorian cultural figure, Sir Henry Cole, receive such a hostile reception?
Presumably, if it was the first Christmas card, because everyone who got one thought, oh, Christ, I haven't sent him one. So they got into a complete spin.
The actual answer is it depicted a family eating Christmas dinner in which the children were drinking wine.
Oh, my God.
Well, everyone knows it should be vodka.
OK, Tim, in Victorian England, what unusual method did the turkey farmers of Norfolk use to get their birds to travel to market in London?
They pretended they were buying them a return ticket.
That's sweet.
Unfair.
The real answer is the farmers gave each of their turkeys little leather boots.
What?
Hence
I'm not
going to read
presumably.
Such nonsense. OK, Barry, your question is, during a medieval English Christmas pantomime, what do you imagine was the role of the bold slasher?
Writing Merry Christmas in the snow.
The answer is, he was a Turkish knight whose job it was to slay St. George before Father Christmas manages to persuade a passing doctor to what a load of codswallop. Graham, what does Santa like to ride on in Finland?
I think she's here.
You be.
The answer is a goat named Akko. Hot cockles was a pastime popular at Christmas until the Victorian era. What did it involve?
Urinating into the fireplace.
Well, it was, in fact, an entertaining game. So you're right to that extent, yeah. Which listeners might like to try at home. In it, one player is blindfolded while his teammates take turns at hitting him. His job is to guess the name of the person delivering each blow.
I think you're better off peeing into a fireplace, don't you?
Yeah.
But not an electric one.
Right, now, no run-up to Christmas would be complete without a visit to Santa's Grotto, which is the subject of our next game. I understand that the standard of grotto customer satisfaction can vary markedly. A four-year-old who asked for a cowboy outfit was given the Virgin Rail franchise. But had to refuse it, as he was overqualified to run a public utility. In this game, one team will be a parent and child visiting the grotto. The opposing team will be Santa and his little helper, Elf. And it's their job to guess what the child wants for Christmas. However, they may only ask questions likely to get a yes or no. The hoped-for present will be relayed to the audience via the display board. While for listeners at home, here's the mystery voice.
Tim's little boy, Stephen, wants a Christmas fairy. That's a Christmas fairy.
OK. Barry and Graham, you're to start in the roles of Santa and Elf. Tim and Stephen will be the parent and child, so if you care to start setting the scene, off you go now, Barry and Graham.
Ho, ho, ho. This is Swarfager, my companion and assistant.
Hello.
I got him on the National Elf Service. Now, young'un, what's your name?
Stephen.
And what do you want? Could you give us any sort of indication? What sort of thing?
Is it very big?
No.
Is it very small?
Speak up, Stephen. It can be any size, really.
It can be any size, can it?
Mm.
You want a slap?
Well, can you eat it?
Well, it might quite like that.
No.
Well. Audience, you can clap if you like. If they're getting warm. Or if you're getting cold.
Does one use it above or below the waist?
Think above. Above is a good thing to think. Above.
Precocious little sod, isn't he?
Keep thinking above and on.
Is it a bauble? Of some description.
It's feminine.
A fairy on a Christmas tree. A fairy!
Oh. I was just about to ring Hull and cancel my gig for next Thursday. Right, Barry and Graham's turn to be parent and child now. The title of their wished-for gift will be relayed to the audience via the laser display. Well, here's the mystery voice for listeners at home.
Graham's little boy Barry wants the fourth bridge. That's the fourth bridge.
Tim and Stephen, you're Santa and Elf, and off you go.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ha, ha, ha.
This is my little boy.
And he'd like something for Christmas, I expect, wouldn't he? He would, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, bless his heart. Oh.
Is it a toy?
Well, it's a matter, it's a matter of scale, really.
Yeah. Is it something you could fit into the average bedroom? I will not get on your lap.
Well, stop dancing, then. Is it the Seven Bridge?
Shall I nut him, Dad?
It's obviously something very
big.
No,
it's not. It's far from the Seven Bridge.
Far
mate.
From it.
Is it a...
Is it the Fourth Bridge?
Okay, of all the components that go into making this time of year special, there are some essentials that shouldn't ever change. For example, an imitation tree can never match the real thing. A fragrant fir not only brightens the room for the festive period, it can be planted out in the garden to provide months of enjoyment as you watch it turn brown while you're digging... while you're digging pine needles out of the cat. But with the relentless march of commercialism, Christmas shopping isn't the same anymore. Gone are the days when you could pick up a few boxes of walnuts, some dates, a couple of yo-yos and a selection of sugared fruits and still come away with money in your pocket. Now, shoplifting isn't what it used to be. So, teams, let's play a round called Talking Turkey, in which I'll be asking general knowledge questions on the sayings and folk wisdom of that country. I'll provide the first part, and I'd like you to finish it off. Graham, here's one for you. Esek hosef tan ne enla. Or, an ass does not appreciate.
In fact, it depreciates 10% when you drive it off the forecourt.
Well, I always have to give the boring real answer. This one's not very boring. Fruit compote. Barry, a neighbour's hen looks as big as a goose and his wife is...
worth a gander.
Well, pretty close. It's as young as a girl. Stephen, better a calf of one's own than a...
better a calf of one's own than a thigh of Ann Widdicombe's.
It's jointly owned cow. Oh.
I was more or less right, then.
Yes.
Jim, better to die on a full stomach than to...
throw up over the Pope.
The boring answer is live on an empty one. Graham, every donkey is hung by...
by golly.
The answer is his own leg. Barry, if a dog's prayers were answered...
lampposts will be vibrators.
Bones would rain from the sky. Stephen, it is not disgraceful to ask. It's disgraceful.
It is not disgraceful to ask. It is disgraceful to smear warm Bovril over the buttocks of a casual acquaintance without asking their permission first.
The answer
common courtesy is not dead. I like to hear it.
The answer is not to ask. Tim, it's easy to say come, difficult to say...
not just yet.
OK, we have a special treat now, something that's known in broadcasting circles as a landmark event. The game is a celebrity version of What's My Line, the erstwhile popular TV show, where panellists try to guess the occupation of a guest who could reply to questions only with yes or no. So, for example, if the answers to the questions, do you like meeting people, does your job require a lot of training, and do you know anything at all about hi-fi, were all no, then the guest was obviously a sales assistant in Dixon's. In our version of the game, the team is to attempt to guess the profession of a mystery guest celebrity. And our mystery guest celebrity is Mr. Alan Titchmarsh. Now, Alan, before the team's tried to establish precisely what it is you're doing for a living... perhaps we can assist them by finding out a little bit about you. How tall are you, would you say?
5'9".
Hmm. When you go out on the town, do you go for wine or beer?
Beer at lunchtime, wine at night.
Do you mean you go out on the town twice a day?
Mostly, most days.
A fashion question now, Alan. Pants or boxers?
Pants.
Pants. Inside or outside?
Inside.
Do you like contemporary pop or traditional jazz?
Traditional jazz.
Good. Do you like that better than contemporary pop?
Oh, yes.
Hip-hop or jungle?
Yes.
Most interesting. Right, I'll shortly be asking Alan to perform a brief mime of his occupation, but before I do, here's the mystery voice for listeners at home.
Alan is a gardener. Alan is a gardener.
Okay. Okay, Alan, would you perform your mime for us now, please? Okay, Graham and Barry.
I thought that was only legal in Holland.
Depends whether you use ping pong balls or not.
Graham and Barry, would you start now asking Alan your questions? And if you get a no, then Tim and Jeremy should take over.
Right. I notice you're very smartly dressed, although you did take your boots off as you came in. Do you normally dress like that in your work?
No.
Oh. Anything to do with Hello magazine?
No.
Shot in the dark. Oh, very difficult.
Do you kill people for money?
Not yet.
It says here, continue questioning until someone guesses. So if you can tune in again next week.
Can I? What do you do for a living?
Hang on. And give them a clue, because I think they're lost.
Water features sometimes in my career, and I could feel a right Charlie, especially on a cold morning when... when the perks are more obvious.
That does give
Go on, Graham.
No, combined with
your name, which is not very usual. I wonder if you belong to that group of people with rather curious names like Bob Flowerdew and Pippa Greenstreet and Fred Lodes and Bill Sourbutts. Are you, in fact, a hobbit?
No.
Oh.
Would I be right in saying game shows were involved here?
No.
I wouldn't be right.
No. Is your work in any way artistic or creative?
Yes.
So it's nothing to do with television, then? He works in television, something to do with creativity. Now, are you a creative person in your own right, or are you Melvin Bragg? No.
Are you in a hurry to get anywhere?
Not anymore.
I wonder if I'm going in the right direction here. My garden is a light, loamy soil, which is host to many of the rarer species of native flora and indeed fauna. What mix of concrete should I use to get a smooth, even effect?
No.
I think we've got it, though, haven't we? What have you written there?
Rubber.
Oh. Go on, Graham.
Are you a gardener by any chance?
Yes! Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Titchmarsh. Well, as the father at Christmas of time gleefully reads the cards of destiny in the telephone box of eternity, I notice it's the end of the show. We'll be back in the new year for more of the same, so from the team, Samantha and myself, it's goodbye.
Barry Cryer, Graham Garden, Timbrook Taylor, Stephen Fry and Jeremy Hardy were being given Christmassy things to do by Humphrey Littleton, with Colin Sell setting some of them to music. The programme consultant was Ian Pattinson, the producer was John Naismith.
Stephen Fry, ladies and gentlemen.
Are you getting Titchmarsh back again?
No, he's gone home to Hampshire.
To Hampshire?
Yes, he lives in Hampshire. Come all the way from Hampshire.
What a fool. I've come all the way from Barnet and I feel an idiot.